This is Bob, and today I'm talking with Dr. Noel Whiteman, who is professor of genetics, genomics, evolution, and development in the Department of Integrative Biology and director of the Essig Museum of Entomology at University of California, Berkeley. He also has affiliations with the Helen Wills Neuroscience Institute, Center for Computational Biology, Museum of Vertebrate Biology, and the University in Jepson Herbaria. He recently wrote a very well-received and very interesting science book called Most Delicious Poison. Noel, welcome to KTWH Radio.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be with you back in the North Country.
Aha. Speaking of that, let me start this way. I know from your book that you grew up in northern Minnesota and you went to the same small high school that I did, but we were like 20 years apart. From your book, I also learned that living close to what is now called the Sac-Zim Bog was an early influence on you becoming an environmental scientist. Can you explain that a little bit to our audience?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So until I was about 10, we lived in Duluth in the Lakeside neighborhood. And we used to play in Lester River and things like that. And then eventually my dad got a job at Schneiderman's Furniture, which was up in Meadowlands, the biggest store that they had for a while. That's now closed. But he moved up there to take a job. And so we went with him and we moved kind of right in between Toivola and Elmer. And not too far from the store. And we were right up against, a big part of the Sac-Zim Bog, that was that very kind of black spruce tamarack, more open, wet bog with, lots of peat moss and things like that, pitcher plants all over. And the state trail, as we called it, ran right in front of our house. And so that opened up this opportunity for me to really kind of get to know a unique habitat. Of course, I took it completely for granted because I didn't know any different. It was still interesting, though, to me. But, you know, occasionally there would be a bus parked there, like a charter bus. And I remember walking up to it and, you know, there were people milling about with binoculars and I asked them, you know, if they were stuck or need help or had a flat tire. And they looked at me and said, no, we're here to look at the birds. And I just looked back at them and I thought, what? You know, you're here to look at the birds in our bog? Why?
Really?
You know, I didn't really quite understand. Like, not everyone, you know, can see a great gray owl perched on their telephone pole while they're, you know, doing the dishes at night like we could.
Yeah, for sure.
But that was true, you know. And so, of course, I took it for granted, but I don't now.
I hear you. In fact, I feel your pain. I grew up on the other side of the bog. I think I told you that before. And same thing. I mean, it was all there, I'm sure, and we were just kind of ignoring it when we could at the time.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess our ancestors tried to drain parts of it too to farm, right?
Yeah.
So in some ways, it was seen as, you know, something that was a nuisance rather than what it is now, which is this incredible habitat.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get moving here about you and what you do. Where did you start your college education and how did that path roll out to get you to where you are now?
Yeah, well, you know, I knew I wanted to go to college and my parents hadn't graduated from college. So I mostly relied on little information that they had about maybe where I should apply. And then my high school guidance counselor, Mr. Miller, he kind of told me that I should maybe apply to these few, you know, small schools in Minnesota, private liberal arts colleges. And I think that was a good move because, you know, our school, TM, was very small.
So, yeah, really?
Right? I mean, it was way smaller when I was there, I think, than when you were there. But, you know, I had like 15 people in my senior class.
Yeah.
And, so I think going to the next step being a smaller place that was, you know, a couple hours away, but not too far away was a good move for me because it was so sheltered, you know. And so I ended up going to St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota.
Yep.
in Stearns County, which has a very different landscape. You know, it's oak savanna and northern tallgrass prairie, farmland. So similar in some ways, you know, but in other ways really quite different from northeastern Minnesota.
Yep.
And so then, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought, well, maybe I'd be a doctor or something because I had an interest in natural history. But I should actually interject that right after high school, I went to Gunflint Lodge north of Grand Marais, was a naturalist there. Yeah, and that was my first job sort of outside, you know, the Meadowlands, Toivola area. And that is when I sort of stopped taking for granted, you know, kind of my link with natural history and nature, because it was clear that that was a skill that I had that was useful. And that's why I landed that job, which involved taking tourists on nature hikes and canoe paddles and things like that.
Sure.
So, yeah. But I got to St. John's and was pre-med for a little while, but I quickly realized I didn't really want to do that. I really don't like blood. So human blood. I can handle blood from a deer, a bird, a fish, but like human blood, didn't really like it. So, you know, and then I took an entomology course, which is insect science.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of opened up this well, I guess, that I didn't know existed of interest in insects. And that was taught by Jim Poff, who was a professor there. Actually, just retired out in Vacaville, and I had lunch with him last month.
Oh, all month right. Before.
Yeah. So, so that process was gradual, kind of moving toward studying basic research in biology. And then I did an honors thesis with Jim looking at these paper wasps and a particular aspect of their ecology. And that kind of got me going.
Well, let's move from there then to where you are now. You have a very broad scope for a chemist. I was a chemist, and it's sort of like you have this narrow scope of what you do, and you try to do it better, you try to do it faster. But you've got this broad scope thing that defines what you and your students study. Could you explain this idea of integrative biology?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the goals that I think of all biologists is try to understand how we got here. We, the royal we, as in not just humans, but all organisms that inhabit the planet. And we know that that process arose through organic evolution. And that is what we do in my lab. And we try to understand the origin of new traits and new species. And what we focus on are the adaptations that arise from interactions between species, ecological interactions, things like interactions between the monarch butterfly caterpillar and the milkweed, for example, and the toxins that the milkweed makes that are toxic to most insects, but are actually used by the monarch as defenses, you know, sort of co-opting them. Yeah. So these kind of like nested, intricate, ancient, but very dynamic systems are what we're interested in. And it takes this approach that cuts across different levels of biological organization to get there, going from the genes that are doing the adapting, right?
Yep.
To the phenotypes that they express, the traits they express, and then the forces that shape that, the natural selection and things like genetic drift that shape the genes that are associated with these adaptations. And so, yeah, so our approach requires that we be integrative, but it also requires sort of breadth across different kinds of species. So it's not like we're just focusing on animals, right? Because they're eating plants. And sometimes there are microbes that have to be understood to really get to the bottom of the dynamic between, say, insects and plants. Oh, and then there are birds eating the insects, you know? So So it's a many layered thing in multiple directions. And I think that is ultimately what all of biology is. You know, it's not just studying cells or just studying ecosystems. We have to kind of take it all into account, I think, to have a fuller picture. And we try to do that. It's hard to do that. So we do have to focus on some systems, which is what we do. That's kind of been our approach, is to tackle a few of these complex systems. But again, as you say, it's like we work on chemicals produced often by the plants that are toxic, and then kind of follow them through and see how they actually are forces that are basically, you know, ways of natural selection working. So I guess that's one way of thinking about what we do, is that we're really interested in watching the chemicals as they move through these systems, as they're born through evolution, and then their impact on organismal fitness.
Yeah, that's a great description. And I know for a fact, since I just read your book a while ago, that if anybody's interested in more of the details and the and examples. The book is just rich with them, and I have to congratulate you on making it friendly enough for even a chemist or a normal human being to read. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, thanks, Bob. My goal was, my target audience was my mom.
There you go.
I wanted anyone to be able to understand it who, you know, was interested in the kinds of questions that I was asking in the book, you know. And the book, I try to kind of thread in human stories because, as you pointed out, you know, we're all people. And scientists are people too, and that is part of the story of the book. And, you know, I did that in part because I wanted people to relate to, you know, sort of the scientific aspects. Because it's very hard if it's just science. It's so dry, right?
Oh, sure.
But at the same time, I think science books are sometimes dumbed down, right? I think that is that people need to be challenged. I think it's okay if you don't know what a word is. I think that's a good thing. Like, we can look it up. You know, I didn't want to do too much of that, but I also didn't want to patronize people and spoon feed them what I think are actually pretty complicated, just truths.
Yes.
So one of my goals was, because I'm a professor, so one of my goals was to teach people how to think a little bit that maybe hadn't had a chance to do that from an evolutionary lens, you know, using an evolutionary lens to look at nature.
Yeah.
Well,
it worked. And
good.
It did. It that's a great book. Before we run off the track here, maybe I should get a lot, what I always like to ask, and that is, do you have any advice for young folks who are starting out and have developed an interest in nature or looking at pursuing a career that relates to the environment? Anything you can tell them?
Yes. What I would do is, even if you're in high school, try to get into a research lab somewhere. It could be university. It could be industry. It could be government. It doesn't matter. The main thing would be to find someone doing research, usually who has a PhD, and figure out a way to do an internship with them. And there are lots of different ways of going about that. One is to simply go on the web and look up the biology department or chemistry department or physics department or astronomy department at your local university or college. Usually community college professors aren't doing research, so it would have to be somewhere like UMD. Even College of St. Scholastica is going to have people doing research. But then the EPA labs up there, they're a private industry also. But get in a lab and start, you know, just doing stuff with them. It doesn't matter what it is, because having an open mind at that stage is probably the most important thing. Okay. The main thing is to see if you like, you know, basic discovery research. And you can't know that unless you start understanding kind of how scientists approach things. Do the work. Yeah. So, you know, you could volunteer. Sometimes there are even funded programs that will give you a little bit of a stipend, say over the summer. But what I would say is, you know, my parents focused on us having like jobs, like labor jobs, like baling hay, stacking hay, sanding furniture. And I remember asking my dad, why did you push that? He said, well, I want you to see if you like doing that. And if you don't, you should use your brain, you know, for work instead of your hands. And so I kind of realized that I really didn't like that kind of work. Gotcha. And I respect people who do, but I didn't. And so what were the venues for me? What were the opportunities for me? You know, and there weren't very many down there. So you have to kind of step outside your comfort zone and sometimes the comfort zone of your parents and your family. This is what I would say.
Okay.
And push it. And push it. And that might also mean doing an internship somewhere else. So there are programs through the National Science Foundation, if you're in college already, that allow you to go to other labs and do research experience for undergraduate. They're called REU programs, and they're all over the country.
Okay.
I think it's harder for high school students, but there are opportunities, and you can kind of push yourself into situations that can, you know, be beneficial. Great. But you have to be the one to reach out to these faculty or researchers, you know, if they're in a government lab or something like that. But the main thing is, don't give up.
Okay.
Persistence is what pays off, you know, and most people don't know this, but scientists, you know, most of the time the answer we receive when we're asking for funds to do our research or when we're trying to publish our research is no.
Right.
Those are the most common words we hear, but they're often no, but, you know, so
yep.
Not this time, maybe next time, or if you revise and resubmit, maybe we'll reconsider it. So that is how the process worked. It's sort of by denial at first, you know, but yep. The door is usually not completely slammed shut. It pays off. And so that's the other piece of advice I would give is keep trying, don't give up, and stay curious.
Perfect. As far as I'm concerned, this is a great interview right where it sits. But is there anything that you think we missed that you'd want to talk about before we wrap this baby up?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, to your listeners that the, you know, Northeastern Minnesota is a very special place for lots of different reasons to me, but also just in general. It's you know, where the boreal forest meets the mixed deciduous conifer forest, meets the prairie, the center of the continent. You know, the most variable climate in the United States is there, probably.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's you have the beautiful lake there. You know, there's so many wonderful things about just being there and absorbing nature that people should not take that for granted. And, you know, I did a little because, you know, that's the only thing I knew. But in hindsight, it was great inspiration and continues to be for me a wellspring of that in my own career. And so I would just say to everyone to, you know, appreciate what you have up there and protect it.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And that was Noel Whiteman, Minnesota boy and professor at UCal Berkeley.